In episode 2, we are going to be covering Shantae, Half Genie Hero, the new 2017 DuckTales. We're also going to be talking about what is it like being in a Pokemon League. And finally, the long-awaited impressions of Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. Now strap in and get ready to go beyond the start button! Alola, everyone. Welcome to the Beyond the Start Button podcast. This is the podcast where we take a passionate look at nerd life through things that we're passionate about. And we're going to be covering TV, movies, comics, anime and manga, and of course, video games. I'm UberNerd527, and I want to welcome you to our podcast. Now, if you listened to our first episode from last month, this episode is actually going to be a little bit different, and before we actually get into the podcast, I want to tell you guys why. Now, between when we recorded our last podcast and when we posted it and when we're recording this podcast, a lot of stuff had happened. Now, we had actually planned that episode 2 would be kind of our best of 2016 and what we're looking forward to 2017, and we were also going to throw some other things in too. Well, the best of and the look ahead was so jam-packed full of things that we wanted to talk about that we decided to make it a separate podcast. So, listeners, you are actually going to get a special gift this month. You're going to get 2 podcasts this month. So you're going to get, of course, this podcast, and then, of course, you're going to get the podcast for kind of our wrap-up of 2016 and our look ahead at 2017. So look forward to that podcast a little bit later on in this month. Now, as for this podcast, let's talk about what we're going to be doing today. So first, we're going to start off with Press Start, which is our segment where we just basically talk about just whatever we're passionate about this month. We're going to talk about Shantae, Half Genie Hero, my review about that game. We're going to be talking about the DuckTales series, which will be premiering this year, and they just recently announced the voice cast. We're going to be talking a little bit about that. Then we're going to go into Pokemon Rewind. This is the segment where, of course, we talk about Pokemon, and we're going to talk about everything Pokemon. We cover the manga, we cover the video games, we cover the anime, we cover everything, and so we're going to be talking a little bit about that in Pokemon Rewind. After we talk about just a little bit about Pokemon, we're going to have a special segment where I actually went to the Fashion Square Mall in Orlando, went to their Pokemon League on Sunday, and actually interviewed a lot of their members. I also interviewed a friend of mine and fellow podcaster and professor of the Pokemon League, which basically means he's just the guy who runs the league. And that, of course, is Daniel. And Daniel is from a podcast called The Reasons I'm Broke podcast. So we'll talk a little bit about that when we get to the segment. Then finally, the meat of this episode, the thing that you've all been waiting for. We're going to be talking about our impressions of Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. And we're also going to be joined by another special guest. We're going to be joined by Ray Gunn, the creator and founder of the Arcade Archives Network. Me and him are going to talk about our impressions. In fact, we recorded this podcast on the drive home from seeing the movie from the first time. So it's going to be a little older. It's going to be a little raw. And for those of you Star Wars fans there, you might cringe because I don't, at that time, I didn't know all the characters' names, because me and Reagan actually wanted to stay so fresh that we only watched the first trailer and we didn't even really research the names or anything like that. We just kind of just went in as fresh as we possibly could. So please forgive us for not knowing all the characters' names and all that stuff, but we just wanted it to be as fresh as possible. And then after me and Reagan talk about the movie, Danny the Ultrasonic Player is also going to put his 2 cents in after that. So that's pretty much our podcast for today. So let's go ahead and press start. All right. Now, as you probably already noticed, Danny the Ultrasonic Player is not with me today. So I'm actually going to be talking for just a little bit by myself, and then he's going to join me later on. But first thing I wanted to talk about in Press Start is I wanted to talk about a game that I'm very passionate about and a game that I've just played the brand new version of, and I just wanted to share it with you. And that, of course, is Shantae Half Genie Hero. Now, if you have been on the site for a long time, you know that I am a huge Shantae fan. I actually started my Shantae fandom back in 2015 with Shantae and the Pirate's Curse, which is technically the fourth game in the series. Now, I started playing that game and loved it so much that I wanted more, so I actually went back and played the other two games. I got them on the Nintendo eShop. So I got the original Shantae game that actually came out for the Game Boy Color back in the day, and then the Shantae Risky's Revenge, which came out on the DSi, not when the DSi was a thing, but then they also put it on the 3DS's eShop, so you could purchase them as well. Ever since then, I've just been a huge, huge fan of Shantae, and that's two parts, really. The first part being, I love side-scrolling video games. I just absolutely adore side-scrollers. Since I was a little kid, I've loved Mario and Sonic and Rayman and other side-scrollers that I really, really enjoyed. And honestly, I feel that that's my favorite genre of video games is side-scrollers. When I played Shantae for the first time, it kind of made me remember those side-scrollers I used to play when I was a kid. But at the same time, it gave me kind of a new experience with it. So if you haven't checked out Shantae, I highly suggest it. Now, the second reason I love Shantae is actually because of the company that makes them. And the company that makes the Shantae games is called WayForward. Now, if you never heard of WayForward before, WayForward is mainly they do a lot of side-scrolling video games. They really do a great job at these side-scrolling games. Now, if you've never heard of WayForward before, you may have heard of several of their video games. Now, two most notably that I want to share, besides, of course, Shantae, is Batman the Brave and the Bold for the Wii. If you haven't played that yet, it's really, really cool. A very great adaptation. It's kind of more like a side-scrolling beat-em-up game, but it's just so much fun, and you can have all your friends come and join you, the different DC characters throughout the Batman the Brave and the Bold. So definitely check that out. And then the other one, of course, is DuckTales Remastered. And DuckTales Remastered was a redo version of the original NES game that came out back in the day when DuckTales was super popular, which was actually made by Capcom back in the day. And WayForward did a great job of bringing back that original DuckTales feel. And the most notable thing that I want to hit on real quick, because this goes into my review, is that DuckTales Remastered had hand-drawn sprites with 3D backgrounds. And I believe, if I'm correct, that they actually use the DuckTales Remastered engine to create Shantae, Half-Genie Hero. Now, Shantae Half-Genie Hero has been in development for a pretty long time. It actually came out as a Kickstarter, and a lot of people donated for the Kickstarter. And unfortunately, I didn't know of Shantae when they were actually getting donations for it, so I wasn't able to actually donate for it. But I was able to follow along as the game progressed. Now, this game was actually supposed to come out, I believe, in the end of 2015. It was slated to come out that, but unfortunately, because of some issues with the game, they decided to push it back. And then it was supposed to come out in summer of last year, and then it finally it came out in December of last year. And I was so excited to finally play this game. And let me tell you, first of all, it is worth the wait. It was so worth waiting probably an extra year and a half to play this game. I enjoyed this game thoroughly from beginning to end. It is such a great game. The gameplay, the graphics, the soundtrack, the writing, everything is done so very well, and I enjoyed it so very much that it is a testament to WayForward's ability to make great side-scrolling games. Now, if there's anything that I could complain about this game, is actually something very, very small, and because I've played the other Shantae games previously, I kind of missed it from this game, but really, it's so minute and minor that it really doesn't hamper the experience. But in the original Shantae games, you could actually kind of explore. It was on the vein of like Castlevania and Metroid, where you can kind of just go where you want to, and then as you get power-ups or weapons, you can then pass through different blocks and blockades so that you can get to different areas on the map. In this game, it's more of a straightforward side-scroller game. So it has the overworld map, and you get to select the level, and then you go into the level, and then you can do all that stuff, you know, very similar to like Super Mario Brothers 3 and Super Mario Land and games like that. So I kind of miss the freedom of exploration that the other games had. Again, though, this is a very minor thing because you can go back into levels and you can discover hidden treasures and hidden items in each level as you get more power-ups. I just kind of miss the fact, the little bit of freedom to almost like an open world game where you can kind of just go where you want to. I just really miss that about the game. But again, it's very minor. Everything else as a part of this game is so, so good. Another thing I wanted to hit on real quick, and this is more of a wish. So since Shantae is a genie, I'm hoping she is listening to this. Maybe she'll grant my wish, but maybe WayForward is listening to this. Anyways, I would really, for the first Shantae games, they haven't done any kind of cutscenes per se. I would really, really like it if they could do some cutscenes. Even if they just use the engine, which they kind of already do already in the Shantae games. But I just want to really have them kind of... I really want to have them kind of plus it a little bit. I really want them to kind of bring it up a little bit more. And I'd really like to hear some voice acting in Shantae. Now, Shantae herself, there is a little bit of voice acting, so every once in a while, some of her lines of dialogue, you can actually hear her say things, and some of the other characters as well, but most of the time, it's kind of like the old Lego games where people would just grunt and just make noises as you're kind of reading their dialogue. I just really wish there was like some cutscenes and some voice acting, because I would really, really love to hear it. I guess partly because of that, and partly because I kind of wish there was a Shantae cartoon that you can watch. In fact, one of the Shantae fans out there on YouTube, and I don't know where they're from. I think if I would guess, they're from France. But anyways, they did a flash animated Shantae and edit cartoon, and it actually turned out really cool looking. And I guess it kind of whet my appetite for it. So that's just another little gripe that I have about the game, is that I just really wish that they could have some cut scenes with the characters actually talking and interacting and stuff. But again, these two things are very, very minor. The game itself is amazing. They pull from not only just old school classic side-scrolling games, but they also pull ideas from games like God of War and other games like that. Like, for example, just like in God of War, there's lots of giant villains, the giant bosses that you have to fight. In Shantae Half-Genie Hero, there are huge bosses. And in fact, they actually pull the camera back so that the Shantae sprite is actually very, very small on the screen. And some of these bad guys you have to fight are just massive. And it's just so cool to see them try all these different things with the game. It was kind of a gamble, and I think it paid off very well for them. So if you're looking for Shantae Half-Genie Hero, it is on all platforms except for the 3DS. So you can get it on the PlayStation 4, on the PlayStation Vita, on the Wii U, on the Xbox One, and on, I believe I already said, the PlayStation 4. However, I was told when I was getting my game that the Wii U version was actually canceled. That is not the case. There is a Wii U version. There is a hardcover version of the Wii U version, and there's also a downloadable version as well. So, highly suggest it. Highly pick it up. If you get the hard copy version of it, you also get the soundtrack for the game as well. So, like I said, the soundtrack is one of the best parts of all the Shantae games. I love the soundtracks for pretty much all the games that had soundtracks. Now, the Game Boy Color game had music, but of course it was chiptune music because of course it was on the Game Boy. But the other games are just as good, if not better, and it just ramps it up a little bit more. So highly suggest it. Try it out, Shantae Half-Genie Hero. All right, so now we're going to get into DuckTales.
Yeah, so it looks like there was this announcement about a brand new DuckTales cartoon from Disney. So Ubernerd, what do you make of it?
Well, the show itself was actually
actually announced probably about earlier in the year, but we haven't heard anything about it for, we haven't heard anything about it really.
No.
We just knew it was coming, and then they teased with a little concept art for it. So we haven't heard anything since. Well, yeah. Now they decided to introduce us to the new voice cast for DuckTales.
Yeah.
And I think they did it in probably the best way possible. I think it was such a creative thing to do. And so what they did was they had the entire main voice cast sing the theme song to DuckTales.
Wow.
And as the song kept going, they would introduce each person as their character, you know, who they're playing and whatnot.
Wow, now, this I gotta see.
Yeah, it's really fun. Most of the people in it, I don't know who they are from what I've been told from other people, that some of them have been on Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. Some of them have been on Community and Parks and Recreation, which, again, I've never seen.
Huh, interesting.
So I don't know anything about that, but that's what I've been told by a couple of friends who have watched this video with me. But the one thing, the one part of this announcement trailer blew my mind, and I actually was told this by a friend, and I didn't believe her at first because I was like, no, there's no way. But so when I started watching the trailer, though, it confirmed what she said. Voice actor who is playing Scrooge McDuck,
yeah,
is David Tennant.
Whoa, get out of town.
David Tennant.
Seriously?
For those
the
of you,
oh my
the
God.
Doctor himself, the 10th Doctor. Also, he was in the Harry Potter movies.
Huh.
He was also in Jessica Jones as the main villain in Jessica Jones on Netflix. Yeah, so you can see him in all these different shows. He is a really good actor. I really appreciate him. He's also done voice acting as well. He's done a lot of shows nowadays. You can actually find him on not only two animated versions of the Doctor Who, but also you can find him on Nickelodeon's Ninja Turtles.
Whoa.
As a robot. And then on Star Wars The Clone Wars.
Yes.
As a robot.
Oh, wow.
So he apparently he likes to voice robots. I don't
know
why.
Yeah, clearly. and speaking of which, I think he plays a certain character in the new Star Wars cartoon Rebels, though I can't remember exactly what, but yeah, or at least according to Dave Filoni.
Okay.
Anyway, so all right. I mean, I'm just like, wow. I mean, initially when I first heard about this, I wasn't sure what to think because the original cartoon was just so much of a classic. I mean,
right.
I mean, granted, which is kind of strange because, and the reason why I'm saying this is because I don't have the box sets yet. I know that is blasphemy, you know, especially given that I am a huge fan. I still have the original NES DuckTales cartridge, mm-hmm. in my house. I have the remastered version, which again is amazing. But my gosh, I mean, but just hearing what you just said about the cast doing a little, like, you know, impromptu performance of the original theme song. It's like, okay, now I'm sold. I really gotta check this video out.
Yeah, you gotta check this video out. It's a lot of fun. Each person starts singing a part, and then they put the voices together, and it's actually quite just a fun thing. And it actually shows us that this cast is really excited about doing this show.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited. Now, here's the other thing that I think is great about David Tennant. I don't know if you know this, but David Tennant is actually Scottish. So I think he's going to fit a Scottish rich.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Perfectly.
Hands down. Yep. Hands down. No doubt about it.
Now, don't get me wrong. I love the original voice of Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah. Alan Young.
I think it's going to sound a little weird at first because I'm so used to hearing his voice come out of Scrooge McDuck's mouth.
Exactly. When you think of Scrooge McDuck, you think of the late, great Alan Young.
Yes.
Yep.
And, you know, his last project was DuckTales Remastered,
yep.
Which was really cool to hear him do.
Yep.
And even he did sound older, but... but
not
he
too
didn't,
much.
He didn't see him that much older.
No,
you
no,
can
no.
tell that he's aged, but you
yeah.
can... You could tell that he's aged, but at the same time, he still sounded like Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah.
So I like that. But I really do think that David Tennant is going to do justice to Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah.
I truly believe that David Tennant is going to do justice to Scrooge and actually bring an authentic.
You mean that sort of those sort of nuances that you'd come to expect from somebody like Scrooge McDuck.
Right. Exactly. And I'm sure that the writers will try as hard as they can to keep it in. Now, I've seen the character models for the DuckTales characters. Mm. It's going to be a little different. We also know that Donald Duck himself will be in the show as well.
Oh, okay.
Whether he's going to be like one of those reoccurring characters that pops up every once in a while, just like in the original, I don't know. But it does show him in the concept art for both. They did two pieces of concept art that are actually quite similar. And both of them have Donald Duck in it. They did a teaser trailer and you can hear... You can actually hear Donald Duck in the background. Donald's gonna be in this.
Okay.
And I'm excited to see all this. And I wonder if they're going to do it more like the kind of a mix between the old school comic and the, you know, DuckTales that we know and love. Now we know pretty much the original cast is coming back. So we know that Launchpad's coming back.
Yep.
We know that Scrooge, of course, Huey, Dewey, and Louie. We know Webby is coming back, and we know that Mrs. Beakley is coming back. Now,
good.
It looks like Huey, Dewey, and Louie are slightly older, as well as Webby. So they made them slightly older?
Yeah.
Maybe in the tweens, kind
of? Yeah,
Which they've done before with Quack Pack, which I actually enjoyed Quack Pack.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people did, but I kind of enjoyed it. It was kind of like a DuckTales light, if you will. But I did enjoy it. So. Yeah. I'm really excited to see this cast. Like I said, the art style is different. Mm-hmm. It's more that graphic style that you've seen recently. Yeah. I think that's mainly because a lot of animation companies are probably using Flash nowadays, and Flash is a tool that they use to do a lot of graphic styles. So it almost in some ways it almost looks like Gravity Falls. In some ways, in fact, in the teaser image that they showed, Webby has a grappling hook gun, which I thought was hilarious.
Interesting.
So I thought that was kind of funny, but maybe even call back to Gravity Falls, but I don't
know. Anyways, who knows.
But it's a really great thing. I'm very excited. I'm even more excited for DuckTales now than I was when they announced it at the beginning, and to know that David Tennant is doing Scrooge McDuck, to know that Launchpad is coming back.
Yes.
To know that, you know, a lot of the cast members that we know and love. Now, here's who I want to see, though. There's one character that he must be in this show. And if he's not in this show, I will riot. I will have a single person riot, okay?
Whoa.
I will riot in the streets by myself if I have to. I want Gizmo Duck, okay? Gizmo Duck has to be in this show. I want him in the show. He has to be there. And I want the original character design. I want everything. I want the one wheel.
Oh my gosh.
I want Gizmo Duck.
Yeah.
And hopefully, if this is successful and they want to continue on and do a bigger Duckverse, if you will, a bigger Duckverse. Maybe even throw in Darkwing Duck.
Wow. Okay? You know, I mean, actually, that wouldn't be too far off. Because, you know, I mean, given that there seems to be a resurgence now in kind of bringing back these classic characters, and especially given the design of DuckTales, which seems to be almost... I mean, because, again, I mean, I still have to go back and look at the concept art myself, but... because I always see the Mickey Mouse cartoons that they're giving now.
Right.
I would not be surprised. You know what?
Come it's to not think- that graphic style.
Oh, not that graphic style. Okay.
It's a different type of graphic style.
Yeah.
It's more. It's not necessarily a just shapes kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like you have to see it for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a graphic style, but it's also not. Like the new Mickey Mouse cartoons that you've been seeing.
Yeah.
So it's not that graphic.
Yeah. Okay. You know? But going back to what I said before, I really feel that if they do decide to go ahead and do the same thing for Darkwing Duck, I think the art style would not be far off the map because, I mean, obviously Darkwing Duck is basically Disney's version of essentially Batman as well as that sort of classic noir type vibe, which would fit the character, especially considering, you know, who he is.
Right.
I mean, granted, who knows what they'll do, But if they do it right, and if it is a big success, which I seriously doubt why it can't, considering right. the quality of the cast.
Right.
You know, then, hey, I say go for it, you know?
And I think that is one thing that we're going to be seeing a resurgence of is TV shows, not only just TV shows that have been redone.
Yeah.
And to really grab that adult crowd as well as the right. kids. But I think it's going to, and we've been actually seeing this a lot lately.
Yeah.
With TV shows like, Adventure Time, My Little Pony. Yes. Friendship is Magic, with shows like even Transformers.
Yes.
And I'm trying to think of some other shows.
And not just that, but also I know that it seems that Young Justice is called. And basically, for the longest time, it had been on, basically it was canceled after season two.
Right.
And but it was left on such a high note that a lot of fans were clamoring for it, and nothing. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, a lot of the producers went on to do other projects instead. But then, just a few months ago, there was an announcement that Young Justice was coming back on season three, but on Netflix.
Right. Exactly.
Which is really good, because from what I understand, because I didn't get a chance to see all the episodes in the show, but the times that I did, they really straddle that line mm-hmm. on the ratings of the show, and not in terms of like people watching, but in terms of like, you know, like PG, PG-13, they were right. really straddling that line, but in a good, in a smart and intelligent way.
Right, right, right.
And the beauty about Netflix, and this is something I've found out, you know, just about every Netflix show, is that you don't have to worry about the, you know, the standards and practices thing that you would have to deal with on a regular, you know, TV network. Right. With Netflix, you have a lot more flexibility. And obviously, you know, that's where a lot of shows seem to go. I mean, Voltron, Legendary Defender, I believe, that one was done purely on Netflix. Uh-huh. And from what I understand, what I've heard from fans, both fans of the original
right.
that came out in the 80s, uh-huh. and they love it. It's okay. it's amazing. So yeah. that is how you do a good show. But yeah, there seems to be a resurgence of new animated things.
And it seems to be a resurgence of things that both kids and adults can sit down and enjoy together.
Yes.
Which I like that. Yeah. I like that we're getting to this point where our consciousness is that not that cartoons are just for children.
No.
That it could be for everybody.
Yeah.
So I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. All right. So that's pretty much it for our press start segment. So now we're going to move on to Pokemon Rewind.
Woo!
Hey, this is Keldeo, the Sword of Justice, and you're listening to Pokemon Rewind.
All right, so the first part of Pokemon Rewind that we're going to be doing here is we're actually going to be playing through a recording that I did a few weeks ago at Coliseum of Comics in the Fashion Square Mall. The Fashion Square Mall, for those of you who don't know, is in Orlando, Florida. Mm-hmm. For those of you not listening in Florida, my friend Daniel, who is actually a fellow podcaster as well. He does a podcast called The Reasons I'm Broke Podcast, mm-hmm. Which
Good
is
show.
A great show. Great show for those of you older kids.
Yeah, yes.
You younger kids. Yeah, no.
Yeah, not yet. Not yet.
But if you're an older kid and you like pretty much the same thing that we like, I would highly suggest it. He is in charge of a Pokemon League at the Coliseum, and they meet every Sundays and Mondays, Sunday afternoons and Monday nights. It was a very great experience that I had. I really had a great experience there, and the people there are really great, and Daniel knows what he's doing.
Oh, yeah.
he really does. And so what we're going to do now is we're going to turn over to me, past me. We're going to turn yep. over to past me
yep.
and have past me kind of just talk to a lot of the people that are there, and, of course, Daniel himself, and talk about the Pokemon League. And this was during their winter tournament, so they actually had a tournament. Now, when I say league, I mean this is for the TCG, or trading card game, for those yep. of you not in the know. So this is for the TCG. It's not for the video game, although I do wish that there was a video game group, but that's just me. This is for the card game, but we had a lot of fun there, and I really wanted to share this with you. So let's turn it over to Past Me.
All right, so we're here for our first interview with Daniel. And again, like I said earlier, Daniel is the professor. I thought it was gym leader, but professor of the Pokemon League here, and also a good friend of mine and fellow podcaster as well. So Daniel, how does it feel being part of the Pokemon League, being in charge of it all?
It's a lot of fun. First off, hello, Arcaders. Is it Arcaders?
Yes, it's the Arcaders, yeah.
How you all doing? Now, it's great. It's built a place where a lot of these players can come out, they can test out their decks, a lot of casual players especially, and then we introduced tournaments about a year and a half ago. So a lot of these players have been seeing their decks and they've been developing their skills throughout the year, and that's really rewarding, especially as a professor, just to see them finally get the confidence to go into a tournament, play, and most of all, have fun.
Mm-hmm. So how long have you been the professor of the Pokemon?
I want to say a little over 2 years.
Okay.
We started Pokemon League here at Coliseum of Comics around that time.
Okay.
And we started running the tournaments, as I mentioned, a year and a half ago. But yeah, a little over two.
Okay, cool. So do you jump in there sometimes and play maybe the TCG or maybe even the actual video game sometimes? Or how does that work?
Well, I definitely always bring my 3DS with me to get those street passes. I love collecting the puzzles on there and just, you know, it's a great way to connect with players. But for the TCG, I will jump in if there's like an odd number of players and the store is slow enough. I'll be like, okay, let's play out a match. And a lot of the kids especially, I'm not sure why, but I'm like the barometer for them. As if they can beat Daniel, then they know they've made it. And I'm like, I'm not that good, but all right.
Okay,
that's kind of cool.
I want to ask an aside question. Do you have a lab coat since you're a professor?
I do have a lab coat, actually, yes. I'm in the process of getting some patches on it. I ordered some Pokemon patches. I've got a Pokemon Go one. And I'm just waiting for my wife to get on that because I'm not good at sewing.
Well, you could always just the iron-on. Is there iron-ons?
They are iron-on. I'm also not good at ironing. I have no life skills. No life skills at all.
That's okay, but you're a professor, so that's fine.
Yes.
You know, you have to worry about research and you know, running the league and okay, I get that. So, tell us about what happens usually at a league. What do you do? What kind of special things do you have at the league for players that come to it?
So players have a month-long season. They will play as many games as they can during that month. We meet twice a week. And then based on the number of games they play, they will earn stamps and they will earn promo cards that Pokemon.com provides us with.
Mm-hmm.
And these are really cool because they are, while we may see those cards normally in booster packs, they have the Pokemon League logo on the card itself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a special, exclusive thing that players can get. And best of all, it's free for the players.
Mm-hmm.
It's casual, it's free play. And then the next month comes in, new set of prizes, new cards for everyone.
Cool, very cool. And so they can learn from each other. Now, is it just specifically the TCG?
Mm-hmm.
But also some people do come and play the actual game as well, right?
Yes, and that's a very common question we get is, do we also do the VGC?
Mm-hmm.
And while it is primarily TCG, because that's what Pokemon provides us with, they don't unfortunately give us some kind of digital Pokemon that we can distribute out to everyone, which would be
cool.
Really awesome, so Pokemon, get on that. But most of the players have both. You know, they have the video game and they have the cards, so they will bring their DSs and they'll battle it out here, and I'll count that as stamps too.
Cool, all right. So here's some other questions for you. What's like the oldest card that somebody has? Like, has anyone brought like a really super old, like maybe the first set deck or anything like that?
Absolutely, yes. just 2 months ago, we had someone bring in a base set deck that was considered the meta deck back then.
Wow.
Just the strongest deck, and played it out. I mean, you know, they were playing another old deck because if you try to bring that in against the X's, you're not going to do too well.
Right, right.
But yeah, you will see people our age bring in the classic cards.
Very cool, very cool. And do you do also VGC tournaments or anything like that, or do you just stick with the TCG?
We just stick to TCG until we get like a bigger VGC crowd. Then we'll consider doing video game tournaments, and especially once Pokemon actually supports that side, then we'll definitely start doing it.
Yeah, awesome. Anything else you want to throw out about the Pokemon League here at the Fashion Square Mall Coliseum of Comics?
Yeah, we run it every Sunday from 1 to 3 and every Monday from 6 to 9. If you are in the Central Florida area, by all means, feel free to join us. Again, that's every single week. And next year, we're going to start doing Pokemon League Cups, which are going to be every single quarter. They are a citywide event in which you can come in, earn points, earn booster packs, and eventually maybe even compete in the regionals and nationals and, of course, worlds.
Awesome.
But if you are outside of Florida, go to Pokemon.com, go to Event Finder, and find your local Pokemon League, support them, and most of all, have fun.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Daniel. And you can catch him on the Reasons I'm Broke podcast as well. So if you want to hear more about Pokemon and about Batman, I think that's about all you talk about. Batman, Pokemon. I think that's pretty much
that's
it.
That's a
really.
Summary. Justifying Batman and Bulbasaur everywhere.
All right. Well, you can catch him on the Reasons I'm Broke podcast, and you can also catch him here at the Coliseum of Comics. So let's go on to our next interview. All righty, everybody. So we're here with our first interview. We got a two-for-one here. So we got Javier and Hunter, who are in the Pokemon League. Welcome, gentlemen, to the podcast.
Welcome.
How are you guys doing today?
We're good.
All right. So let me go ahead and get started with some questions. All right. So my first question is, how long have you guys been doing this Pokemon League?
Probably for about a year.
About a year?
9 months, to be exact.
9 months?
11.
11 months. Wow. Okay. So almost a year. Okay. Awesome. So how long have you been playing Pokemon?
Playing Pokemon like on video games and stuff?
All of it.
Just since we were like six.
Since you were six. All right. What was your first like Pokemon game?
Probably Pokemon Emerald.
Emerald?
2015.
Oh, wow. You guys make me feel old. Okay. So my first game was Red. Was the original. Was Red. Awesome. So how long have you guys been playing the card game for?
Probably for about a year.
About a year?
11 months.
11 months? Awesome. All right. And what kind of deck do you run, dude? What kind of types do you have in your deck? I mean, you don't have to tell me everything just in case you want to, like, you know, keep it a surprise. But, you know, what kind of type Pokemon do you have in your deck? What kind of strategies do you use? Stuff like that.
Mega Mewtwo Y and Volcanion.
Those are the two decks I play.
Okay.
I prefer fairy decks and water decks. I hate fire.
So it's like your favorite types is fire types?
I hate fire.
I'm sorry, water decks. You like water types?
Yes, because there's no ice types.
There's no, oh, okay. All right. Have you won any tournaments or anything like that since you started here?
I've got like second place, highest.
Okay.
Second place too.
Okay, cool. Awesome. All right, what about the video game? Do you guys play the video game as well?
Yeah.
Do you play in tournaments with the video game, or just is it just the card game?
Kind of alone on the video game.
Okay.
I prefer just to play the video game alone.
Oh, okay. All right. So, but you do like to play the card game with others. That's cool.
Yes.
Oh, that's cool. All right. So, who's your favorite Pokemon? I have to ask. I always have to ask. Anytime I meet a Pokemon fan, who's your favorite Pokemon?
Lucario?
I have a loose, but I was just going to say Zoroark.
Zoroark? All right. Awesome. Very cool. I like those choices. All right. Awesome. Well, thank you guys very much for your interview. We're going to go on to our next one. All right. So we're back with another interview. This time we are here with Dylan. Dylan, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Oh, that's good. That's very good. All right. So let's talk about the Pokemon. You play the Pokemon TCG, yes?
Yes.
Okay. So how long have you been playing said Pokemon TCG?
About a year, probably. I've been collecting for 2 or 3 years, probably.
Okay. All right. Now, this is probably going to make me feel old, okay? What was the first Pokemon anything that you either saw, watched, whatever?
I started watching the anime when I was like 4, so that's like 2008.
Okay. What, just because I need to feel old, what part of the anime was it?
I think it was black. It was the generation before black and white. I don't.
Oh, Diamond and Pearl.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So you were 5 years old. Diamond and Pearl. Wow, okay. Yeah, I'm feeling old. Okay, so did you start playing the games or did you start playing the TCG or how did you get into like playing the games and stuff?
Oh, this is a really awesome story.
Okay.
For my birthday, a few years ago, my dad got me black, white, black 2, and white 2.
Okay. All at the same time? Wow. Okay. All right. And that was your first Pokemon experience?
Yes.
Cool. Wait, who's your starter?
Always Oshawott.
Oshawott. All right.
I like the balance.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely. I like Ash's Oshawott. If there's one Oshawott I love, it's Ash's Oshawott. So, anyways, so you played through that, and then you've played it ever since, Black and White?
Yes. I got X, and I haven't got Omega Ruby or Alpha Sapphire or Sun and Moon yet, but I'm getting Sun and Moon for Christmas.
Okay. Awesome. All right. So, how did you get into the TCG? How did that work?
About a year later, I told my, like, my dad knows that I love Pokemon. His girlfriend, actually, her son had a huge bin of just a ton of Pokemon cards, and I got all of them. And there were a ton of hollows, and I was like, oh my god, this is amazing.
Oh, awesome. All right. And then how did you start playing in this league here?
The first week of this month, I was looking at leagues because I have been watching league vlogs. Trainer TV, I think, was the YouTube channel.
Right.
And so I looked up Pokemon leagues near me, and I found this, and I've been coming here for the past few weeks.
Oh, awesome, awesome. So you've just started coming here. Do you like it? Is it a lot of fun?
This is like the most fun league. This is the most fun Pokemon event I've ever played.
Awesome. Now, do you bring both your games and your TCG, or just specifically TCG when you're here?
Just TCG.
Just TCG? All right, cool. All right, now I have to ask, because anytime I meet a fellow Pokemon fan like myself, I have to ask this one question. You probably already know what it's going to be. Who's your favorite Pokemon?
It's going to get... It's like the stereotypical Pokemon. It's probably going to be Pikachu.
It's going to be Pikachu. All right. So why do you like Pikachu so much?
Just because it was the first Pokemon I ever saw.
Oh.
I was watching the anime and I saw Pikachu and I was like, oh my god, that's amazing. Like, how did these people think of this?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Awesome. Awesome. And so now... I know that not a lot of people like to talk about their deck, okay? So whatever Pokemon deck you have. But tell us whatever you can tell us. How's that? So what kind of deck do you run? What kind of types does it have? What kind of Pokemon specifically do you have? And then maybe even give some tips to those listeners out there who maybe want to start their own, you know, start playing the TCG and stuff like that.
The Nidoking deck. And it has only Psychic. It has a couple of Mewtwo's, some... I don't know. It's mainly just a couple of Mewtwo's, three Nidorans, and then two, and then one Nidoking.
Okay. All right. Awesome. So what would you suggest? Would you suggest someone, like, just pick out a Pokemon that they like and then build a deck around that? Or maybe just a type that they like? Or just start playing.
Okay. First of all, I would just like to say there's nothing wrong with starting with a starter deck, but I would recommend editing it.
Okay.
Just a bit. Like, take out some energies and add in some trainers, or take out some Pokemon and add in some trainers.
Okay.
They definitely have too much Pokemon energy, I would say.
Okay. All right. And are you looking forward to the Sun and Moon set when that comes out?
Yes. I watched some Pokemon Japanese Sun and Moon openings, and it looks amazing. And I love the new art style.
Mm-hmm.
It looks amazing.
Very cool. All right. Well, thank you very much, Dylan, for talking with us. All right. Thank you, Past Me. So Past Me, we had a really fun time there. And I hope that you fellow Pokemon fans out there find a place where you guys can get together and have your own little Pokemon league. This is actually an official league, so this is sanctioned by Pokemon and all that stuff. So it's kind of an interesting thing to go to see all these players play and all these just talk about Pokemon. And
yeah.
And even if you're not playing the card game, there are people who will bring their DSs and whatnot to play. So,
yes.
So it's a lot of fun. So now let's move on to our next part of Pokemon Rewind. And this is always a fun part, I think. So the last episode we did this and I thought it was a lot of fun. So we'll do it again. So where are you in Alola right now? Okay. So where are you in Pokemon Sun and Moon? Danny, the ultrasonic player, let's start with you.
Okay, well, in terms of where I'm at right now, I actually just got finished defeating a certain Pokemon captain right now. So I pretty much just got through. And for those of you who don't know, he's
very flamboyant.
Very flamboyant, essentially, but not in a bad way though. Fortunately, but of course, granted, we're still early in the game, so who knows what could happen.
Only the shadow.
Exactly.
Only the shadow.
Yes. So I just got through beating him, and I gotta tell you, his Yongoose and his Smeargle are very tough customers, which is saying something because I have a Yongoose all my own, but my gosh, does this guy train his Pokemon like crazy? I mean, I mean, even my even though the fact that my Picky Peck knows Rock Smash, which is perfect to use against normal types, that still does not, that doesn't mean that you have much of an edge, because his Pokemon, his two Pokemon right now at this point are very, very tough cookies. But granted, I did manage to win, which is important. So so that's where I'm at right now. So okay. I'm on my way heading over to Route 2 right now. So yes, I'm still on the first island, but that is currently where I'm at right now. So hopefully the next time we do this little segment, I'll actually be further along.
Okay.
But that's my current that's my current thing right now.
So where's your team? Who's your team? As of right now. So let the audience out there know who your team is. Who's your playthrough team so far?
Okay. Well, it does fluctuate over time. But as it does.
As many playthrough teams do.
Yes. But I can tell you right now, my current Poke team that I've got on hand right now are Meowth, Popplio, Munchlax, Spinarak, Picky Peck, and actually a Litten, which I got in a cool Link trade, which I have to credit my good arcade brother, Obernerd. Thank you so much for helping me out with that.
I know, right?
So, yeah. So, yes.
Wonder Trade is wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Believe me. And for those of you who have Sun and Moon, you know, and are curious about the Wonder Trade, really give it a shot. You would be surprised as to what kind of Pokemon you actually might get. So, I mean, again, you never know. Right. You never know, and that's the beauty of it.
That and also the GTS, because if you don't want to Wonder Trade, if you want to know exactly who you're getting, the GTS or Global Trading System is also very much improved over what it has been in the past. So please, please, please feel free to go on there and get the Pokemon that you need. And now that we have the QR codes, you can scan those and you can find Pokemon that you haven't seen yet. So it's a lot easier to find Pokemon and get them off the GTS than it has been ever before. Speaking of QR codes.
Yes.
So this is another special announcement for those of you Pokemon trainers out there. Now, if you have beaten the game, you are now given a QR code for the mythical Pokemon. There's a difference between mythical and legendary. Legendary you can catch in the game, mythical you cannot. There's a QR code for the mythical Magearna, which is a fairy steel type Pokemon, and it kind of looks like a cross between a metal bunny and a little, like a servant, like one of those old-timey servants. It's a really great Pokemon. I haven't technically fought with it yet, so I can't tell you how it is in battle. However, and this is kind of segue into the next thing, but however, I have noticed that a few of the teams, professional teams, have been using her. So now, here's how you do it, okay? If you go to Pokemon.com, there is a QR code online. All you have to do is bring up your QR code scanner, scan Magearna, and then go to Melee Island, where the big mall is, the inside mall, and you can actually, there's an antique store at the top, at the very back of the store. If you go there, you'll meet a guy there, a big buff dude, who is delivering a box full of what he says is an antique, and the antique store doesn't want it, so they give it to you. Because you just randomly walked up, and lo and behold, who is in that box? Magearna is in that box.
Wow.
So it's not necessarily a spoiler, really, but...
No.
But you get Magearna. It's a really great Pokemon. I can't wait to use it. Steel Fairy is really kind of a cool typing. I know that Pokemon like Cleffa is another Steel Fairy type, and Cleffa are very difficult to beat. So having a Magearna would be very good for your team if you use mythical Pokemon. Honestly, I don't use mythical Pokemon. I don't even really use legendaries. I know. I know out there, a lot of you out there who are in the scene probably like, well, that's stupid. Well, I just don't like to use legendaries. I like to use the Pokemon you can catch in the game. So that's just me, but I think it's a really cool Pokemon. It looks really cool, and I can't wait to see the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Volcanion and the Mechanical Marvel, which also has Magearna in it. So yeah. Now, speaking of the tournament, so just recently they announced the very first online competition for Pokemon Sun and Moon, which is called the Battle of Alola, which as of recording this right now, it started this weekend. I did get a chance to join in on the fun. It was a lot of fun. I will not say how well I did because it wasn't really that well, but I just used my playthrough team. I didn't Eevee or Ivy train or anything like that. I just used the team that I went through the game with, but it was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun playing it, and I cannot wait to get those 50 battle points. That's going to be all worth it. Yeah, very, very fun time. So Battle of Alola, very good. I can't wait to hear the next one. So the only weird thing about this game was that you couldn't use any items. No items. So it was like old school. It was like old school Pokemon with no items.
Oh my gosh.
But they also had like every Pokemon from Alola was eligible to play in the game.
And oh wow.
That also included Greninja.
Oh my gosh. You got.
So I did fight against someone who had a Greninja, but I beat them thoroughly. So, but anyways, it was a lot of fun. So, Battle of Alola, very, 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 very cool. So that's it for Pokemon Rewind this week. So let's move on to the meat and potatoes of our podcast, and that is the Rogue One, A Star Wars Story Review.
A not so long time ago in a podcast that you are currently listening to. It is a period of civil war. Rebel spaceships striking from a hidden base have won their first victory against the evil Galactic Empire. During the battle, Rebel spies manage to steal the plans to the Empire's ultimate weapon, the Death Star. An armored space station with enough power to destroy an entire planet. Meanwhile, three nerds get together and decide to record a podcast to talk about the brand new movie, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. So get ready to hear our special edition
of the Beyond the Start Button podcast, featuring UberNerd527 and Danny the Ultrasonic Player with special guest, the creator and founder of the Arcade Archives Network, Raygun.
We're going to be talking about something that we've been wanting to talk about for a year now when we found out it was coming out, and that would be Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. Isn't that what it's called?
Yes, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story.
A Star Wars Story, which I thought was really kind of lame at first. Like, just call it Rogue One. We don't have to have A Star Wars Story. It almost sounded like a soap opera. And I was like, kind of like, oh, that's great. But yeah, so we just saw Rogue One.
Right.
It is, what's today's date, my friend?
Today is the 21st.
It is the 21st December 2016.
Okay.
And it's been out for a week, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And we just saw it. We just left the theater. And we thought we'd do a quick and dirty podcast to kind of go over our feelings of this film. Now, folks, we're going to do this one a little differently. In the past, we've done a little pre-show, and then we jumped into it. This time, we're jumping right into it. There will be spoilers, so if you have not seen this movie, do not play this podcast at this point, okay? Exactly. So, from here on in, after the silence, and obviously the spoiler little soundbite we'll have, we were going to jump right into the middle of this film. So at this point, if you have not watched this movie, please turn this podcast off and listen to the other two that I have been working on for the last 6 months, because they're not about this movie. Okay? So here we go.
All right, listen up smartly. This right here is your spoiler warning, which means if you listen past this spoiler warning alert and you haven't seen the movie yet, and it spoils the movie for you, well, it's kind of your fault because you listened to it even though I warned you you'd not listen to it. So, this is their last warning. Turn back now. Don't listen to the rest of this podcast if you haven't seen the movie. Spoilers!
Okay, let's talk a little Rogue One, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right, sir. I'm going to jump over to your side. You're the younger guy. You know, my brain is foggy. I'm still taking everything in I just saw. Because honestly, if I had to name this movie, and I already said this to you when we were leaving the theater, I would call it Star Wars Everybody Dies. It's like, wham, there you go, buddy.
Oh, wow.
So, well, honestly, when they showed the cast photo probably, what, 9-10 months ago, that was my first thing I thought about. I said, because if you listen to the... in A New Hope, when they're at the base and they're talking about the plans, they say that many people gave their lives for these plans. They weren't kidding, because like every major character dies. Everyone. There is no one left at the end of this film other than Tarkin, Vader, and Princess Leia, and of course her dad. Her pop dies in the next film. You know the sequel, A New Hope.
Right.
You know, but that's pretty much it. That was what I thought of as soon as I saw the film. And, you know, of course, that part for me was very depressing because you knew. You knew. It was kind of like watching the prequels and knowing that this small child into a young adult and everything, you already knew what was going to happen to him. You knew that he was going to become Darth Vader. And you were sad. For him, if you liked the films, you were sad for him. And that's how I felt going into this movie, was I was sad because I knew that no one in this film would be left standing. You know, if they were, they were going to be pulling an Obi-Wan Kenobi and disappearing and hiding on the desert planet somewhere. So I knew that going in. But what were your impressions of this?
First of all, I'd like to say that I really did like the score for this film, the look of this film, and the characters.
Yes.
I was a little worried at the very beginning of this movie because I didn't think I would connect to any of these characters.
Yeah.
But I did. Yep. And by the end of the movie, I was actually really sad when a lot of them started dropping off.
Yeah,
and,
I have to agree because they were they were slapdash together like in the other films. I mean, you know that you, but in the other films you knew there'd be a sequel and those people would be coming back,
right?
You know, but here you get right into the heart of things, and the next thing you know, the end of the film comes.
Well,
and
I feel that this has kind of a Joss Whedon, thing is that if you've ever seen Serenity, and again, spoiler alert, if you've never seen Serenity, one of the major characters in the film dies.
Right.
And none of the Firefly fans knew that was going to happen. And it also made you, like, scared that the rest of the cast was going to die.
Right, right.
Well, actually, two major characters die in the movie, but one was like a surprise. Like, one we kind of knew it was going to happen.
Right.
The other one we didn't know until it happened.
Right.
And the reason he put that in there was because, you know, there's been many movies where you know the main characters are going to survive because either there's a sequel already planned or
right.
something like that or something
right.
along those lines. Because we don't know what happens, it makes you care about the stakes a little bit more, and it makes you go, well, who else is going to die? Who else is going to bite the dust, you know?
Right.
Now, let's get away from the whole dying thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
For a little while.
Yep.
So, my only complaint about this movie,
yep.
And I've been seeing this a lot lately in a lot of media,
right?
Not just this movie.
Right.
And I think I've said this in plenty of other podcasts as well. I really don't like when some of the movies or TV shows or whatever just go through everything so quickly that you don't really have time to process the information in your brain.
Exactly.
Now, I understand that they really needed to get to point B, but they wanted to give you some backstory. They wanted to show you where these characters come from, but I really, really wish that they would have taken a little more time with it and given me my brain a little bit more time to process what's going on.
Right.
Maybe even taken a break halfway through and just kind of maybe showed a scene, you know, during Jin's, childhood with
right.
Sol Guerrero, you know, you know, what that kind of thing was all about.
Yeah,
maybe
that
just
was
like a little teeny little story.
Yeah, because all you see is him open that hatch, come with me, blah blah blah, and then all of a sudden she's an adult.
Right.
And you didn't get a feel for
their
really
relationship.
Anything. Yeah, there was nothing there.
Yeah.
You know.
So
and then,
I felt it just moved a little too fast at the beginning.
Right.
Now, once it got midway through the movie, though,
right,
then it slowed down, and then I was able to process. That's why I was scared about these main characters, because I didn't know if I liked them or not, because they introduced them so quickly that I just was like, okay, who are these people? Where are they from?
Absolutely.
But once it took its time a little bit more, once you understood the characters a little bit more, then I enjoyed it a little bit more. And then at the end, I was sad these characters gave their lives.
Yeah.
And I think everyone had a hero moment. I think everyone had the moment where you're like, these guys are awesome. That was my only complaint about the movie, really, is that beginning moved a little too fast.
Yeah.
If it was me writing the story, I probably would have taken a little bit more time at the beginning. But does that hamper my enjoyment of the movie? No, absolutely not. It slowed down enough in the middle to where I could catch up with everything. But there's still a lot of things that there's a lot of characters I still don't understand.
Right.
Now, some of the characters, like, I forget his name, but he was the blind guy.
Yeah.
And again, this is why it's so fast. It's so fast that I hardly even remember some of the characters' names.
See, that's the thing, folks. I mean, we literally just walked out of this theater.
Nice.
And because of the pace of the film, it's hard to pick up these little...
Except for Jin, because they said her name like a million times.
Right.
And K2SO, who is my favorite character.
Yeah.
Those are the only two characters I can remember their name. I can't even remember the second main character, the captain.
Yeah.
Cassian,
I think his name was.
Cassian.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's why it's if I don't remember the characters' names, I'm sorry. It's just that just so fast paced, I can't remember.
Right.
But the blind guy, I really enjoyed.
We'll call him Blind Jedi.
All right. I really liked his character. I liked that he wasn't a Jedi. He does not have the power of the Force or anything like that. He's more like a Force monk, if you will.
Well, the impression I got of his character was that he, probably blind all his life, probably looked up to the Jedi to the point where he used his blindness as kind of... almost a link to the Force, because everything he did worked because he was blind.
Right.
He literally could almost see without seeing.
Right.
So, and that's why he always chanted,
I am one with the Force.
Yeah, he would always say that, and then of course he pulls out that weapon, and I'm like, wow, he can actually shoot and hit targets. And,
right.
You know, because you get the impression... Now, we're going to call him Blind Jedi Guy. And hey, folks, I mean this only jokingly, okay? We love these characters, but we're just taking it in, so this is just a good way to reference...
We didn't have time to research
this, but
the pace of the movie just didn't get me to remember these guys' names. But...
Right, and then you had the guy... Well, I'm going to call him Vacuum Cleaner Gun Guy. Because I'm not sure why in the heck this guy had this contraption on his back.
I'm going to call him Jane.
Okay.
Because he reminded me of... He reminded me of Jane from Firefly.
Oh, okay. I was thinking more shades of Luigi's Mansion there with the vacuum cleaner on his back.
Oh, gosh.
He was obviously an impressive marksman. He could hit anything with that elephant gun he was carrying. And then we find out later it actually has almost like a bazooka on it.
Right.
Then, of course, you have the captain.
Right.
Who obviously is a sniper. He's a marksman, and you get that he has a really dark past, because in the very beginning, he's talking to the one gentleman who obviously has been injured due to something, and he has to get out of there, and he's like, I won't be able to get out of here, and he says, no, don't worry, we'll make it, and then shoots him dead. Well, right there. Blam. Done.
That's a thing that I've noticed, too, is that, like, a lot of times in filmmaking, especially nowadays, like, your good guys aren't always so good.
Right.
You know, back in the 70s, and when Star Wars was first made, you knew the Rebels were the good guys, and you never, ever saw them do anything that be what a good guy would do.
But you had Han Solo. And right. You knew that Han Solo, as much as you didn't see him do things,
right.
Obviously, Han shot first was basically what you saw. You knew that he was capable of killing.
Right.
You know, so it kind of harkens back to that. He was right. The Han Solo of this movie.
Right.
And that's why I liked his, you know, he grew up tough just like she did.
He lost a lot, just like she did.
Yeah, he makes a point to say that.
Uh-huh.
Then you have, like I said, blind Jedi, the vacuum cleaner guy.
You have the Imperial pilot.
You have the Imperial pilot, who, by the way, I really thought was going to be a double agent. I thought he was going to turn around and do something dirty, and he didn't.
No.
He was in it for the long haul, and that really impressed me, because that would have been something, like... It harkens back, and as much as I really wanted to love that movie, was Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, where you had his friend who shows up out of nowhere. We know nothing about that character. He's supposed to be his best friend, and he turns on him.
Right.
You know, and I thought that was such a cheap shot, you know? And that's what I was expecting out of this, was that the Imperial pilot was going to be that kind of character. He was going to turn around and do the dirty deed and stab them in the back. And when he doesn't and sacrifices himself to send that transmission, I mean, then that's where, you know, we joke about everybody dies, but everybody dies for a reason.
Right. Yeah, it's not just everyone's dying just because they wanted to kill everyone.
Right. No.
There's a reason for it. And again, everyone has their hero moment.
Yep.
And
everything pieces together so nicely. That's what I like. To get that transmission out to
the Rebellion.
I'm just going to get this out here because it's been driving me nuts since I saw it. The plans, and you look at it today, and it was so cool back in 77 when you first saw it. But honestly, it looked like an animated GIF. They were saving a GIF. Okay, the GIF's been saved. Here, send it off. Get it out there. It's a GIF. It spins around. Yahoo! That's like, wow. It was so impressive.
Well,
but, you know, it had to reference the original movie. Right, so that's why, you know. But
also, it gave a little bit more. Because if it had today's technology, that wouldn't have been as hard.
Yeah. No, you got to remember. Yeah, that's my point. Is like that GIF is 40 years old, so obviously it better look like it did back in 77,
right?
Or else it wouldn't work,
right? I forgot to tell my favorite character.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Well, your favorite character, and I'm going to let you talk about this one.
K2SO,
right?
Who is voiced by Alan Tudyk. Who also, ironically, is the voice of Wash the actor who played Wash in Firefly and yes. Serenity, and then also Con Man, if you haven't seen Con Man yet. It was actually kind of funny, when he was filming Con Man, he was actually doing the voice of K2SO, but he couldn't tell anyone what he was doing.
Right.
He was under contract. He couldn't say anything.
Right.
He could only say that he was doing a film, and it may or may not have to do anything with Star Wars.
Right.
That's all he could say.
There's an interview with him on a British talk show, and it's quite colorful language-wise, so I won't use the words, but he has a conversation with Anthony Daniels, okay, because he wants to get into the role of being a droid.
Right.
He wants to understand the master who has done this for 40 years. So he goes to him and he says something. He goes to him and says, I'm going to be the droid in the new Star Wars movie. And he says, are you in a costume or are you doing motion capture? He says, why motion capture, of course. And he turns around and says, you son of a whatever. And basically lays into him, because he's not having to wear a costume. And then the premiere happens, and, you know, he's not quite, you know, Anthony Daniels, obviously not a fan of motion capture because he's been in the costume. He's been the droid.
Right.
You know? So I guess they do the premiere. He sees the movie, and Anthony Daniels is sitting next to him, and he looks like he's about to cry, and he turns to Alan and says, "You F." Because he was, like, so impressed, he just blurted it out, like, you know, but he was jealous at the same time because his role didn't require him to get into a metal suit and be screwed in and that and the other thing. He had a nice, cool motion capture outfit on and some stilts, and that was pretty much it. So I just thought, you know, and of course I can't use the language, but the language actually made it very funny because that was the last thing you would expect Anthony Daniels to say. And, you know, but I thought it was interesting that he would actually go to Anthony and ask his advice, how he would handle being a droid.
Right.
You know, because you want to make sure that it matches with everything else that's happened.
Right.
It's 40 years later, different technology. How does this work? Mm-hmm. You know, how do we make it a part of a universe that is so dedicated and loved by people?
Right.
Because at the end of the day, you know, acting aside, there are two things everybody goes for. They want to see droids and they want to see outer space battles. And if you can't get those right, it's not a part of the universe.
Right.
It doesn't feel like it fits. And I think, in a way, some of the prequel stuff being as over the top as it was with some of the fight scenes, I think it went too far. And I think that's why, like, a lot of people, you know, kind of fell out of the film because of it. And I don't think that this movie suffers with that at all.
Right.
And that's what's really cool about it.
Well,
the battles.
I also like K2SO because he wasn't your typical Star Wars droid.
No.
Actually got to see him fight.
Yes.
You got to see him shoot. He was very sarcastic, which I loved. And he was a completely different droid, and we didn't have an R2 or anything like that.
No.
We just had him, and I liked it. And seeing multiple Star Wars versions, seeing not only just the movies, but Clone Wars, which makes the prequels, by the way, so much better if you watch Clone Wars.
Absolutely.
And then also Rebels with Chopper. You know, because Chopper is a completely different droid from K2SO and R2-D2 and C-3PO. You know, they all have different droids. And this one is a little, very sarcastic. I would say that this one is kind of what R2-D2 would be if he could actually speak.
Absolutely, I agree.
I just really enjoyed his character. I thought that out of all the characters, I really liked him. Because he was this Imperial droid who was reprogrammed to help the Rebellion. I like that they kept his Imperial insignias on just in case.
Right.
So if they get captured or anything, he can always disguise himself as an Imperial droid. He also was a tactician droid, which is interesting if you've watched the Clone Wars.
Right.
Because Clone Wars had... The Separatists had tactician droids,
right.
Very similar to him. So I'm guessing this is like the new generation of those
Absolutely.
Droids. You know, and being, although it was sad, you did point out that one scene where they said his droid models were actually
obsolete. Because let's explain something here. We don't see his droid type at all in the actual original trilogy.
Right.
He wasn't thought up yet. So my question going in was, okay, he's a really cool droid. How are they going to pass off that we don't see him at all, or his type at all, in the 4, 5, and 6?
Mm-hmm.
And they do it very, very subtly. I mean, it's like not even in your face. And basically, two stormtroopers are walking down the beach, which that in itself is hilarious. and they're talking about his particular model being...
Scrapped. Yeah.
Because they're outdated. And so that kind of tied it up in a very neat little bow. Uh-huh. If you caught it, that's why you do not see any droids like him at all.
Right.
You know, so I found that to be very, very refreshing in the fact that they didn't sugarcoat it. They didn't bring it out in the spotlight. It was just a subtle little, and you know, if you missed it, you obviously you can catch it when you see it the second time, or
right.
you get the Blu-ray.
Right.
You know, so I really appreciated that they didn't dumb it down for the audience.
Right.
That obviously the white elephant in the room, the fact that he is not in any of the other movies.
But I mean, some droids though look very similar to him. Like the medical droids look very similar.
Oh, absolutely!
So,
you can tell that you know they obviously you know are manufactured either at the same place or they use similar parts.
Right.
And I appreciate that even more. And right. I think that's what I love about the Star Wars universe is their you know the way. They've built the backstory for all of this and how all of it is tied together.
Well, I mean, even it's so incredibly important to me, too, because, like I said, I've been watching Rebels. I just finished season two. I know I'm behind. Season three is going on right now. I know I'm behind, but there is a scene where the Rebels, the main crew, goes to Geonosis.
Yes.
Now, if you've watched the prequels, there's a very small scene of Count Dooku getting the Death Star plans from the Geonosians.
Yeah.
Leaving the planet.
Right.
So we know that the Geonosians were building the Death Star right. at that particular moment. Right. They were starting to build it. Okay?
Right.
So one of the things I've always wondered is, if Geonosis was such a hot spot for the war, how did they hide the Death Star? Okay, so I was wondering about this. Well, then the Rebels season two comes up and they go to Geonosis. Now, obviously, this is after Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Okay, they go to Geonosis to go see. I kind of forgot, but they notice they scan for life.
Right.
And there's no life on the planet. None. And they're like, "What do you mean? There's no life? There's Geonosians live there." And they're like, yeah, they're all dead. and they said they noted that they were having ship platforms, and the ship platforms were humongous.
Right.
So automatically that tells me that they built pieces of the Death Star and probably shipped them out somewhere. And when all the pieces of the Death Star were completed and they were forming it together, they just killed all the Geonosians, so they wouldn't say anything.
Absolutely.
I just really, really love all these connections. The fact that Saul Guerrero is a character from the Clone Wars cartoon, and they made him, you know, in this movie, you know, having all this connect together is so rewarding, especially for a person who has watched Star Wars from the beginning. And, you know, I grew up on Star Wars. I can't tell you the first time I ever saw it, but I can tell you it's been around, you know, all my life. And anything Star Wars, I will watch. You know, I am not a big fan of the prequels, but it doesn't hamper my enjoyment of Star Wars.
No. And the prequels have their place.
Right.
And as the universe gets bigger and they fit the pieces together, the prequels make sense.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing I love about this movie, too. I'll go ahead and throw this out there, too. One of the things that always gets, you know, made fun of or always pointed out is how come the Imperials didn't know about this small little port that if you shot a torpedo through, it blew up the entire station. How did they not know this? And this movie explained why.
And that's the entire reason the movie, in a nutshell, is there, because they have to give it away. And that the fact that the dad didn't want to work for the Empire, but he was the guy who could get the Kyber crystals to work and this, that, and the other thing. And he said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to screw this thing up so bad that they're not even going to know what hit them when it happens.
Right.
And that's what I love about the movie, ultimately, is that it was done out of the love for his daughter and the rebellion.
Uh-huh.
And even though he had to do the job, he chose to do it so that he could make a difference.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and I think that's really what the movie's about for all the characters. They do it because they know at the end whether they're alive or not, they made a difference in the fact that they attempted to do what they did. So I think that really is the reason the film needed to be made, because it was always that question of why and how. And there was, that was always the joke. That was always the, you know, like, you know, a giant space station, but I just used some torpedoes and it's gone.
Right.
You know, well, that ends that argument altogether. And I think that's really cool.
It makes an emotional tie-in now. I really want to now, I cannot wait for this movie to get out on DVD so that I can watch this movie and then watch A New Hope.
Oh, yeah.
And see it especially all together as
with
one
the
movie.
Ending when, what, you know, basically everything is laid out for the first 5 minutes of the film, the last 5 minutes of this film.
Right.
And I think one last thing before we tie this up, we have to talk about the obvious characters that were in A New Hope that were brought back for this film. And that was my big, your fear was about the other characters. Mine were about the ones that A, no longer exist because they passed away, or B, are too old to play the characters they did 40 years ago. And I think it was done very well until they talked. Then you could tell it was a PlayStation 4 game. But when they were moving around, it's like, son of a gun, those things. I mean, you know, you're looking at Tarkin.
Tarkin,
you know,
amazing.
And he's been dead for, you know, probably 30 years. And he looks just like he did in Star in A New Hope. And you're like, and then he opens his mouth and you're like, oh my God, it's computer generated. You know, but when he moves around, there is nothing, I don't think anything's been done to that caliber before.
Well, just like what I was saying at the end of the movie before we left,
yeah,
I thought Tron Legacy did a phenomenal job of doing a young Jeff Bridges.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that was amazing.
That was 6-7 years ago.
Right.
And you look at it today and it's very dated, you know, but then you look at this and I mean, you could see the liver spots on his skin and they looked real.
Right.
And
even young Carrie Fisher.
Yeah. And the thing is, she didn't look as good. She looked very waxy. But it worked. It worked because what it did is it tied in. Because, of course, the end of the movie, here comes Darth Vader. He's killing all these guys off. But they get the disc through the door. And all of a sudden, the escape pod goes down. And it's the first ship we see in the film.
Right.
And then they turn the corner. And there's Princess Leia. And it folds it really nicely in a package so that, you know, like, if you could watch them side by side, they literally would match up.
Right, right.
So,
and I agree. I think that that's really cool. And you know, even seeing Darth Vader in the movie was kind of neat to see. Although you can tell that James Earl Jones is definitely a lot older.
Oh, yeah. You could tell he was older.
Oh.
Now, the other thing I have to say is Vader's mask looked a little different.
Yeah.
Because that little thing at the bottom didn't kind of line up at all.
I will have to say, though, giving him the red lenses on his eyes was really cool.
Yeah, because that's what he had in A New Hope.
Yeah, and it looked really, I mean,
because you could tell somebody was behind that.
It was also really cool because in Rebels, in season 2, Darth Vader comes in.
Yeah.
And, like, wrecks everyone.
Yep.
He just wrecks everybody. And I've never, I don't think anyone who's seen the original movies have seen Darth Vader wreck as badly as he did in Rebels.
Oh yeah, no, because I mean when you catch him in New Hope, you know, he's very
he's much older. Older.
Yeah, and he doesn't throw his weight around. Mm. There's no reason for him to throw his weight around. He does a little chokehold here, a little chokehold there. But then at the end of this movie, all bets are off. He pulls that lightsaber out. He's throwing guys across the room. It's like, wow. Now this is Darth Vader.
Right.
And
you still, in that scene, I still got that feeling that I did in Rebels when Kanan and Ezra first met Darth Vader for the first time. It was like when you saw Darth Vader and he came out and he pulled his lightsaber out, you're like, oh well. Well, it's been nice knowing these main characters in the first season.
But then you have the scene where obviously he's in his milk bath, which I'm not sure what the heck was going on there, but...
I think it was kind of cool to almost see, because it, again, in Rebels, there's a scene at the end of season two where Darth Vader gets his mask cut off, and you see...
Oh, yeah.
His eye.
Yeah.
You see Anakin's eye.
Yeah.
And now, I don't know if this is connected to that. Obviously, I think it would be too many years if that was, because Rebels takes place... What, 13 years after
Clone Wars,
does? And this one takes place, what, how many years after that?
Well, this is right at the tail, or the very beginning of A New Hope, so it's got to be a dozen years, probably.
Yeah, yeah. It's got to be at least 10 years. I'm going to say 10. 10 sounds good. So it's this is about 20 years. So Luke, how old Luke in A New Hope?
He's a teenager, so he's probably in probably 18, 19 years old.
And we meet Princess Leia in Rebels, and she's probably about 13, same age as Ezra. So I would say that this probably took place about 17, 18 years. So this was probably 5 or 6 years after Rebels.
Right.
There's no way he could be in the back. He could be away for that long.
Yeah.
So
it was just a very strange thing, because we've always seen him in his
suit.
Yeah. Well, you know, he has that little chamber he goes into,
right,
and it reseals him and everything else. And obviously, that bath is to probably help with the burns and this and that. And it was just a very strange scene, and you almost see his face.
Yeah.
It's like, it just make a subtle turn.
Yeah, you're just kind of like, can I see his face? Can I see?
You know? So it was really cool. Now, speaking of both, the one thing that that just made me smile was the close-up of the blue milk in the beginning of the film. There was a big old container of blue milk, and I was like, oh my gosh, okay. Have you ever wondered what that stuff tastes like? I figured it was like blueberry.
Apparently you can make it.
Yeah?
Yeah, and apparently there's an alcoholic version of it.
Oh,
so, I enjoyed that. I like that the farm that he lived on looked very similar to farms that you've seen all over Star Wars, including Luke's home on Tatooine.
Now that's one thing I do want to bring up, is I like the change of locales.
Mm-hmm.
Virtually no desert planets or anything like that. Of course, you have,
Jettis.
You have that, which is kind of a desert planet.
Well, they don't really explain much, but I kind of gather from the information that we've heard that this was actually a Jedi planet.
Yes.
This was like one of their Kyber. This was one of their where they got their Kyber saber crystals.
Yeah.
Which is great, because I'm glad to finally hear the word Kyber crystals in a Star Wars movie, because this has been something that they've been talking about in the animated series and the, you know, the books and whatever forever, and you never get to, like, is this going to be part of canon, or is this, so you finally get to, important.
So now we have Kyber crystals and we have midichlorians.
Okay, we don't talk about midichlorians.
Kyber crystals now infused with midichlorians.
I also like that Jyn had a Kyber crystal. That was a Kyber crystal around her neck.
Yes.
Now, whether her mother was a Jedi or not, I'm not exactly sure, because to me, her garb kind of looked Jedi.
Yeah, but you know what's funny is this harkens back to the original films, where people would just say, "May the Force be with you," because that was kind of their way of comfort and coming together and feeling, you know, empowered, even though they weren't Jedis, but people who weren't Jedis would say it all the time. So I kind of like that, because it harkens back
to
the movies.
I also like that too, because now I feel at least now that it feels more part of the universe, that this is kind of a belief system that a lot of the people in this universe believe in. You know, we know that not a lot of people have seen Jedi for a very long time now, because Jedi have either been in hiding, are all dead, or something like that. But they've been around, so you know they haven't been around, so people haven't seen Jedi in a very long time. But the still belief in the Force, although most Imperials, though I feel that the Emperor is probably like, said, no, this is nonsense and poppycock. Right. And, you know, so a lot of the Imperials, even Tarkin himself,
doesn't really believe in the Force too much.
It's an ancient religion.
So. But I like the film. I thought it was really, really good.
I liked it a lot.
I can't wait to see it again.
It's one of those movies whereas last year's film, Force Awakens, you kind of knew what you were going into. There were secrets and everything, but you knew. This was a whole new departure, so it's kind of like, I'm taking it in, and I will probably have to see the movie again and do some research on names and things like that so we don't call him Blind Jedi and Vacuum Cleaner Guy. But, you know, and no offense. I mean, again, we literally, we're now on 38 minutes. We saw it less than an hour ago, and so we're taking it all in. It was an excellent film. I have to say, Disney and Lucasfilm have really outdone themselves. They're sticking to the formula. I was really worried about that for a very, very long time. But these two movies, one after another, have consistently shown that, yes, in fact, that the original movies exist still in what they do. And so that makes me very happy. I think that's, we're pretty much done talking now. Are we going to get Danny the Ultrasonic Player involved in this as well?
Yes, so we're going to get Danny the Ultrasonic Player. Either we're going to have him record something and then give it to us and we'll piece this together. Or, you know, we may get them all together. We'll talk a little bit about it because I would love to talk. He wants to talk about it. I want to talk about it. So stay tuned for that. Yes. It might be after this one. Uh-huh. So thank you very much, Arcaders, for listening in.
Yes, absolutely. And we really appreciate all the support on the site. Things are about to get really different. You're going to see in just a few weeks. So hang in there with us. And I want to say thank you very much from the bottom of my heart for everybody who follows and subscribes on the site and our YouTube channel and everything else. And listen, guys, have a happy holiday because, of course, it's a couple days before Christmas. Keep playing like it's 1981, and we'll talk at you the next time.
May the Force be with you.
Yes, may the Schwaltz be with you.
Yo, what's happening, Arcaders? This is Danny the Ultrasonic Player with my first impressions of Star Wars Rogue One. Rogue One a Star Wars story? Who knows? Maybe it's one or the other, or both. But anyway, basically the best way to describe what Rogue One is that it is an amazing film. And the reason why that's the case is because it's something that feels different yet familiar all at the same time. Because on the one hand, you have basically the basic setting, you know, with the Empire, you know, pretty much stretching their hand across the galaxy, as a certain character ends up saying in the film. And they're just doing what the Empire does best, basically oppress people and push people around, you know, the stereotypical, you know, bully, you know, pretty much being the galactic bullies that you expect them to be. But with that, but even with all of that, it's basically told more from the point of view of regular people. And by that, basically meaning just regular Joes and Janes. There's no Jedi Knights. There's no mystic powers, nothing of the sort. Now, granted, there is still a strong belief in the Force itself, as yet another character ends up saying. But really, for the most part, it is told pretty much from the point of view of just regular people who are caught up in this whole conflict and all come together to essentially, you know, take on the Empire and try to stop them from building essentially their super weapon, which, as everyone by now knows, is the Death Star. So basically what's going on is the Empire seems to be going to specific planets, like, for example, Jeddah being one of them, to get a hold of certain crystals, but not just your typical ones, no, but basically kyber crystals, which, as any Star Wars diehard will know, these are the crystals that Jedis use to create their lightsabers, or put specifically to power them. And so it seems the Empire's been collecting all of them for use on the Death Star. So no surprise as to what that's going to be for, but basically they end up being successful in getting most, if not all, of the crystals, but what they haven't done yet so far in the beginning is test it out. And But believe you me, as we get as the film progresses, we really get close to those trial runs. And yeah, let's just say the test results, while they're not at the same level as what we ultimately end up seeing in A New Hope, boy, does it still do a number on places. But in all, that is enough to give you a sense of what this weapon could do and why it's important that the Rebel Alliance has to find a way to stop them, even though initially there is no way to do it. But fortunately, though, that's where a certain character by the name of Jyn Erso comes in. And she basically manages to, initially, before she even really gets into the Rebel cause, she initially wants nothing to do with the whole thing. She just basically wants to keep her head low and just try to ignore the Empire, or at least as much as she possibly can. But then, when she ends up being broken out of jail by another Rebel pilot by the name of Cassian, played by Diego Luna, she ends up discovering that her father has a very interesting connection, not just to the Empire, but to the Death Star itself. Now, as to what that connection is, you actually will find out later on. Or at least, you think you do. Because you initially think, oh, well, maybe you find out that, oh, yeah, this guy pretty much was responsible for the Death Star. But the thing is, there, as the film progresses, you find that there is a lot more to it than that. So, to make a long story short, as you go on through the film, Jyn and Cassian end up rounding up essentially a ragtag team of people to find a way to get a hold of something, or as we later find out, schematics to the Death Star, in hopes of discovering a weakness in there, which, as we find out, does exist. And, of course, as to what degree was her father involved in the creation of the Death Star and everything else is something that does eventually come to light close to the end of the film. But even with all of that, what makes the film great is, as I said in the beginning, is the characters themselves. They are all average Joes and Janes. There's no force potential in any of them, or at least none that we know of. And even one specific character in general who seems to be sort of like if Daredevil was in the Star Wars universe. And again, if you've seen the trailers, then you know who I'm talking about. But believe you me, the actor who plays him exactly with the kind of finesse and just gravitas that you instantly buy into it without even really needing to think too much on it. And there's plenty of other lovable characters, too. Now, as to what becomes of these characters, well, it's something that you're just going to have to watch Rogue One from start to finish to really see what happens. But in all, it is, as the tagline suggests, it's all about building something great on nothing more but hope. And that's really the core of what the classic Star Wars trilogy is. It's about rekindling hope and trying to build something great, in this case, a rebellion, on nothing more but genuine hope. So, but again, but to really get a sense of why that's the case, you need to go and watch Rogue One from start to finish. And when you get the chance, watch it a second time or even third, because it's that good of a film. So, all right. So, yeah. So those are my first impressions on Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. Or again, still haven't decided between that or Star Wars Rogue One. I don't know. I still might fluctuate between the two. But anyway, so those are my first impressions. So I'm going to take it back over to UberNerd527. And so I'll see you guys next time. And of course, as always, keep playing with power because there are no limits.
All right, that'll do it for episode 2 of the Beyond the Start Button podcast. Again, this is UberNerd527 here. I want to thank you guys so much for listening. Now, be on the lookout online on the site, thearcadearchives.com. We will be putting the second episode of this month up on as soon as we can, and that'll be, of course, the best of 2016 and what we're looking forward to in 2017. We're so very excited to share this all with you this month. Now, before we end the podcast, I want to thank Daniel so very, very much for allowing me to go to the Fashion Square Mall store and record during the Sunday Pokemon League. I also want to thank Raygun for joining us. He is the founder of the Arcade Archive Network. We are so glad to have him a part of our second podcast, and I'm sure you'll probably hear him on the podcast a couple more times. And I also want to thank, of course, Danny the Ultrasonic Player. Again, he couldn't be here for this recording, but I want to thank him so much. He'll be back on to our second episode this month. We're very excited to bring that to you again. If you would like to contact us and let us know what you liked about 2016 and what you're looking forward to 2017, please leave comments below in the post, or you can go to the Arcade Archives Network on Instagram or at Arcade A Network. Again, that's at Arcade A Network on Twitter, and you can always comment there. Yeah, please get a hold of us. We would love to hear comments from you, and once we start getting some comments, we'll definitely put those here in the podcast. So please let your voice be heard so that you could be heard on this podcast. And if you have your own podcast and you would like to join us, or you would like us to guest star on your podcast, please let us know by emailing us at thearcadearchivesnetwork@gmail.com. Again, that's thearcadearchivesnetwork@gmail.com. And just get a hold of us that way. We're so excited you guys are listening to us. And by the way, if you want to get a hold of me personally, I am on Instagram and Twitter at ubernerd527. Again, that's UBERNERD 527. And that's both on Instagram and on Twitter. And of course, you can always find us on Facebook at facebook.com/arcade1981. Again, that's facebook.com/arcade1981. All right, that'll do it for our podcast today. So thank you guys so much for listening, and best wishes to all of you out there.
Hey Arcaders, this is Ray Gunn from the Arcade Archives Network. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast that you're listening to. If you're listening on iTunes, please give it 5 stars. A lot of time and patience go into every podcast we do. 5-star ratings help us so we can continue giving you this quality entertainment every month. And don't forget to share us with your friends. If you're listening to us on YouTube, please give us a like and subscribe to our channel. And if you're over on our Facebook page, please like and share. Once again, we do this for you guys, and we enjoy doing it every single month, so every little bit helps. So please go online and like us today. Thanks. Keep playing like it's 1981, and I'll talk to you guys later. Bye now.
Message from headquarters. This is a Rebellion production and is part of the Arcade Archives Network.
That is all.